Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When Martin Luther King was alive and in the streets, facing police dogs and fire hoses for civil rights, American conservatives generally condemned him as a rabble-rousing lawbreaker and troublemaker. Today, nearly four decades after Dr. King's assassination, many conservatives are singing a different tune, claiming King in many dimensions as a soulmate. King personified Christian activism in politics, they say, and so do we. King said, "Judge not by the color of skin, but by the quality of character," they say, when they oppose affirmative action. King did not speak up for gay marriage, they say, and conservatives don't either. Progressives are appalled. Up next on Point, the left-right tug of war over the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
I have a dream. My poor little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
We will be joined in a moment from Detroit by Bishop Keith Butler, a black megachurch preacher who makes a conservative claim on the King legacy. But first, joining me now from High Point, North Carolina, is the Reverend James Forbes, senior minister at the Riverside Church in New York. He was named by Newsweek magazine one of the most influential preachers in the English-speaking world. He's an authority on Martin Luther King and his speeches. Reverend James Forbes, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
How do you see this conversation about where to put Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in the left-right spectrum and the more recent claims by some conservatives that say, hey, look, Dr. King would be with us?
I believe Dr. King would enjoy having people discuss whether they are with him. But the other issue is whether or not they are discerning the heart of God. You see, King was a prophet. That meant he attempted to bring to the attention of the people not their interest, nor even his interest, but what is the dream of the Creator. When he says, I have a dream, it's important he got the dream from the Creator. Therefore, the religious right and the religious left are likely to find in King both words of affirmation of some of the things they believe in and words of challenge. More important than whether King is on the right or the left is, are people prepared to hear that King was calling us to discern the loving heart of God? And my belief is that those who are liberal should find King to be a person who affirms the attempt to respond in inclusiveness to all God's children. He would challenge the powerful not to hoard their resources against the poor. But on the other hand, King would challenge us to recognize that even the liberals have to make some changes if they are to fulfill their destiny and to stand at the table of brotherly love. So I'm happy to have the conversation. And it is my understanding, you can't talk about Dr. King's work, read his sermons, listen to his speeches without finding some affirmation, because he always affirmed human community and personalities of all kinds of people. But at the same time, Dr. King challenges us, what are you discerning now to help fulfill the dream of the Creator? That's the way I see this battle now.
Dr. King has been particularly brought into the conversation around affirmative action. We'll hear in a moment from Detroit, but of course Michigan voters in November turned back affirmative action at the state universities there. And this speech that we heard right at the top, Reverend Forbes, is where the finger points when this comes up, saying, he said, you know, he dreams of a day when people are judged not on the color of their skin, but on the content of their character. Do you see this as a fundamental argument against affirmative action?
You know, the issue of affirmative action needs to have some Kingian analysis as well. You see, affirmative action has to do with giving special attention to members of the family who are in some way challenged or who are in some way handicapped or who may not have the benefits of the good life as everybody else has. There are two kinds of affirmative action. Affirmative action for the self, everybody wants that. Then there's affirmative action for the others. Not everybody is on that. Dr. King would not have us become colorblind in the midst of segregation and discrimination. You got to look at the fact that there are people of color who are disproportionately represented in centers of power, and their subsistence necessities are overlooked. So affirmative action is about, okay, if we all are part of one family and one part of the family has been neglected, you make sure that there is equality and opportunity for all the members of the family, and that you do that so well that you no longer have to pay attention to color. But as long as there is the reality of disadvantage and also oppression on the part of people who are black or Latino or who are different, you gotta pay attention. Don't get colorblind as long as the power and the money and the resources are in the hands of others. So in a world in which white supremacy still helps to define the contours of the community, where people on the basis of their color have advantage, you can't say, forget color. First, bring the equalization, and then that comes to the day that King says we can realize that all of us are together sitting down at the table of brotherly love. I think that it is so important for people not to play games with respect to King's message to us. Affirmative action is actually take the Beatitudes in the Bible. You take care of the poor in the Gospels, in the Hebrew prophets. Paying attention to the needs of those who have been excluded, that's first. And if there happens to be a color, a link to it, take care of that. But after that, let's look forward to a world where equality and open opportunities are so evenly distributed that we can forget about color.
I want to turn now, if I may, Reverend Forbes, to Detroit and Bishop Keith Butler. He joins us there. He's founder and principal minister at the 21,000-member World of Faith International Christian Center in Southfield, Michigan. Ran for the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate in Michigan last year, coming in second. His television outreach, The World of Faith, is seen each week on several dozen stations around the world. He's a member of the National Coalition of Black Ministers that is fighting to ban gay marriage. Bishop Keith Butler, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Reverend James Forbes, you should know, is on the line with us. Of course, he's from Riverside Church in New York, but he's in High Point, North Carolina today. Bishop Butler, how do you see this evolving understanding of Dr. King in the conservative wing of the American church and politics today? Is there some special claim that conservatives are beginning to make on Dr. King that was not made before on his legacy?
I don't think Dr. King would be classified today as liberal or conservative. I think there are things that modern conservatives and liberals both would take from Dr. King's beliefs and teachings on today. And so I don't think it's a conservative or liberal viewpoint. For example, Dr. King was clearly someone that I believe supported the traditional American family. At the same time, I absolutely believe Dr. King would have supported affirmative action because of the inequality that still exists. And so I think issue by issue, Dr. King was a minister, did believe in the Word of God, and stood for those principles. And so I don't think it's clearly delineated either way, conservative or liberal.
How do you find the support or opposition to gay marriage in the speeches and teachings of Dr. King, Bishop Butler?
I think Dr. King was for equality for all people. I also think Dr. King also believed the scripture that marriage is between a man and a woman. And in his sermons and in his preaching in his church in Atlanta, I'm pretty sure that's precisely what he preached. At the same time, a person's sexual orientation should not exclude them from employment and so forth and so on. And I'm sure Dr. King would have gone at it probably, I believe, the manner in which I'm talking about.
Reverend Forbes, the picture's gotten more complicated in many dimensions in the decades since Dr. King walked among us. Gay marriage not really on the table in the 1960s. What do you say to the view that he would have been opposed to it?
I believe that just as people speak about the Bible, they speak about the Bible as if it were written with the current issues framed in the way that they are. For Dr. King, his commitment to respect for each human personality, his commitment to people beyond the categories that the culture placed on them, so far as I am concerned, I am absolutely confident that Dr. King, when he spoke of equality for all people, would have been today on the side of those who would say, if you have gay people and straight people in the family, you must make sure that nothing that is available to the straight people would be denied the gay people.
We're talking this hour about the left-right tug of war over the legacy and meaning, the message of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Right now, joining us is Michael Steele. He's the outgoing lieutenant governor of the state of Maryland, joining us from Annapolis. He was a Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate from Maryland, lost to Democrat Ben Cardin in November, considered a rising star in the Republican Party. He addressed the Republican National Convention in 2004. Michael Steele, thank you very much for joining us.
It's great to be with you, Tom. How's it going?
It's going very well, and I wonder how you see this evolving conversation around Martin Luther King and sort of who owns his legacy. Is it fair for conservatives to make a claim?
I find it all to be amusing to the point of being really kind of otherworldly. Dr. King, I believe, left us a legacy, certainly, that is entrenched in his writings and his speeches. And from that, we can get a sense of how we should approach our own role in furthering that legacy. I would never presume to project onto Dr. King a view, a 21st century view on an issue based on his 20th century experience. And the reality of it is that what we take from it is the lesson of how we should go forward, how we should treat each other, how we should regard the empowerment of people. And the problem that we have is this left-right, conservative, liberal, red-blue menagerie that's been created that dumbs it down, that dilutes the legacy, and gets us into this pitched battle of, well, he was really a Republican. No, he was really a Democrat. And it's crazy. Dr. King was an American who awakened us to the darker side of ourselves and the lighter side of ourselves. In other words, he made us recognize that we have been creating and doing harm to one another, but we have an opportunity to see the person for their content and who they are, as opposed to just the color of their skin or where they're from or their background. So I tend to come to the debate, if you will, about Dr. King from a slightly different perspective, and that is I learned from his life and the lessons he taught, and I try to take that and imbue every day of my life with those lessons and how I treat the people I run into, how I go about the business of politics, the business.
Lieutenant Governor, we understand that, and it's a kind of transcendent view, and I'm sure all the guests would echo it in some way. You call the debate otherworldly, but on the other hand, it's being used in a very worldly fashion. You've got national groups opposed to affirmative action, citing Dr. King as their kind of leading light in that opposition. Bishop Keith Butler is with us today. The group he's with is very involved in a very worldly way in opposing gay marriage. Some conservatives have cited Dr. King in support for the war on terrorism. So it gets pulled into a very worldly forum very quickly.
It does. And you know, first, let me just say what an honor to be on the panel with a prominent theologian, Reverend Forbes, and certainly Reverend Bishop Butler. I'm just a little seminary. I was in the seminary for a few years, so I don't even come close to these gentlemen. But from that worldly aspect, you're absolutely right. It does get pulled into that. My only caution is that we are careful unless there's specific writings or or a particular tenet that was espoused by Reverend King, that we'll be careful in how, you know, the right or the left, conservative or liberal, projects what King would say or what his view would be. I don't know that. I don't know unless I know from his own hand or his own lips where his position is. Now, what I can take is that the essence of his writings and his speeches speaks about the better part of man, caring for one another, not discriminating, not engaging in the destruction of human beings through war, et cetera. So you can interpret, but I'd be careful in how far we take it. That's all I'm saying.
Reverend Forbes, could we look at it
from the perspective of what he actually did?
First of all,
if you asked about affirmative action, a man who actually dies while he is trying to support sanitation workers to make sure that the scale of pay would be more equitable for them sounds pretty close to the spirit of affirmative action. And a man who died from assassination while planning a poor people's campaign to actually insist that the nation has got to pay attention not just to blacks but to Appalachians and to Latinos, that there's got to be a restructuring of the economic system so that these people will not be excluded. Now, it doesn't take much of a jump to move from that to say, in general, when the language of affirmative action comes up, you'd have to put King in terms of affirming the urgency to look after the needs of those who are disadvantaged in the society. And in regards to marriage, in King's day, it was on some books that to a white man or to be married to a black woman or a white woman to be married to a black man, that kind of idea, this was clearly backed up by scripture. Folks said the Lord never would agree to this, therefore people used the Bible to justify laws against interracial marriage. Mm. But King was clearly saying something is wrong in using the Bible to deny rights to people and to bind them into racial categories that do not allow them to be human beings together. Well, it's not much of a jump to say that if you took that principle and that spirit, then with respect to gay marriage or whatever, King would stand against anything that withheld opportunities for all of the rights and privileges that anybody else had on the basis of their sexual orientation.
Bishop Butler, a mistake to see Martin Luther King's Christianity as necessarily an endorsement of conservatism when it comes to marriage?
I think the statement that Dr. King would denigrate the Word of God and not believe that its tenets were so is somewhat ridiculous. Additionally, the fact that there were people who misused the scriptures for their purposes doesn't mean that Dr. King would then throw the baby out with the bathwater. We're talking about the 1950s, 1960s. There's no question that the people, black people in the 1950s and 1960s and 1970s, believed that marriage would be between a man and a woman only. Now, that you can't say that, and I don't believe this gentleman can say it, I don't believe anyone can say it, that Dr. King would not have thinking, may not have evolved over time differently, but during the time that Dr. King lived, to take the position that he would throw the Bible out, I think is somewhat a ridiculous statement, frankly. And I think that the discussion is somewhat difficult, because you want to talk about 1968 to where he would be in 2007. Who knows? He's like the rest of us. We all grow, develop over time, and may have different views. But in the 1960s, during King's era in Atlanta, Georgia, I don't think there's any question that his position at the time would be that he supported marriage between a man and a woman.
Michael Steele.
No, I would agree with the bishop on that point, because you've got to keep in mind, again, you cannot project into the 21st century a 20th century mindset.
Well, why not? I mean, we refer to philosophers from the ancient period.
But let me tell you why, because you know full well Dr. King as a man of the cloth, as a minister, as a preacher at that time. I mean, that's all you have to deal with at that time.
But isn't he dealing with timeless ideas, a timeless philosophy?
Yeah, you're dealing with timeless philosophy and timeless ideas, but they are rooted in a tradition. And that tradition comes out of the Bible that he taught. And so I think the bishop is right on point when he says, with the point he just made, that you have to keep it in the context to understand, at least on certain issues, where Dr. King would likely have come down had he been challenged or spoken on those issues at that time.
And yet, of course, it sounds as though that could mean that his words could be interpreted to mean anything. We've got a lot of listeners who want to join the three of you. We're honored to have all of you. Let me go to Monique in Hopkinton, Massachusetts. Monique, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hello, and happy Martin Luther King Day.
Same to you, Monique.
I'd just like to say that I really feel that Dr. King transcends politics. I don't find it productive to attempt to classify him as either conservative or progressive, just as I think it's ultimately destructive for one faction or the other to try to claim ownership over Christianity. His legacy should really be cohesive and unifying, not divisive. I think that to the extent that conservatives and progressives both embrace his ideology and use it as a guiding light in developing policy, we all stand to gain.
But can everyone embrace it if their agendas are in conflict, Monique? We've got anti-affirmative action people embracing Dr. King as a spokesman for their view, and then affirmative action supporters saying, no way. We've got people on both sides of gay marriage, on both sides of Christian activism and politics. I mean, can Dr. King really stand for all these views?
Well, overall, I just see him as a needed force for unity in an increasingly divided nation. I don't know that it makes sense to nitpick over, you know, the tiny details, because his core message is so compelling, you know, and such a wonderful force for advancing needed values in our country.
We take that sentiment today, Reverend Forbes. How do you see it? Can Dr. King be embraced by all views and sides equally, with equal justification for their views and agendas?
Yes, you know, you take the Bible. That one Bible is being used by conservatives and liberals and right and left and Republicans and Democrats. But the real issue is whether these people who use the Bible are willing to say the Spirit gave us this book from over 2,000 years ago. Will we allow the Spirit that's at the heart of that book to speak to us as we deal with contemporary issues? So everybody has to take an ancient document and make it current events. And the real issue is, okay, with what spirit do you approach attempting to respond to contemporary issues? With respect to gay people, for example, Byatt Rustin, at the time of King, was one of the best strategists that he had. He was a gay man. Mm. King was aware that within his Baptist tradition that there was really quite a strong homophobia. But he appreciated Byatt Rustin. What we have to ask, if King, in the light of the movement that we have come to today, heard the challenge from gay people that, guess what, folks, your position is dehumanizing us and also robbing us of our rights, I would assume that most people reading King would say King would have probably been sensitive to that. I think that everybody who uses the Bible can also use King, but the issue is, what spirit do we bring when we try to draw wisdom from a past season? And I think very much with Steele that, yes, everybody who takes an ancient document has the responsibility of making sure that our application of the ancient wisdom is in the spirit that was intended by those who put together the ancient documents.
Lieutenant Governor Steele, you know how acutely this has come into a kind of public debate. You may not be happy about it, but we saw not long ago in, what, the District of Columbia, Georgia, Maryland, Ohio, Pennsylvania, the National Black Republican Association running an ad on the air saying, you know, Dr. King was a real man. You know he was a Republican? Dr. King a Republican? Asserting that he was Republican, that Democrats, you know, passed the Jim Crow laws and started the Ku Klux Klan, kind of blurring the line between Dixiecrats and Northern Democrats.
Right.
You came out very much in opposition to that, but this is a very kind of deliberate, current, political use, a grab for a legacy, was it not?
Well, I think, yeah, it is a grab for legacy. And I like the way you put that, Tom, because I think that really is what this boils down to. And for the African-American community, absent present leadership that inspires and moves us to respond and to act to our current condition, there is this reach back to Dr. King. What I think we should be doing, and why I rejected that approach, was because it was divisive. Anything done in the name of King, anything done in the name of the men and women who stand as symbols of inclusion and diversity and opportunity, empowerment in this country, that distracts from that, that takes us away from that, we should categorically reject. You know, when I ran for lieutenant governor in 2002, the Baltimore Sun editorial the weekend before the election said that the only thing that a black man with a degree from Johns Hopkins, a degree from Georgetown Law School, served on boards of universities, ran his own business, the only thing that he could possibly bring to the office of lieutenant governor is the color of his skin. Speaks volume to me about the challenges we still face in this country. And so, which is why I'm less transfixed on whether King was a Republican or a Democrat, and more transfixed on what he was trying to teach us. His speech on August 28, 1963, was an awakening. It was a call to action, not for the people who were standing there in front of him, but for this time, this age, this generation. It was for us in the 21st century to appreciate the struggle of 1963 and define the 21st century in the context of that struggle.
Michael Steele, thank you very much for joining us.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Let's listen to Dr. King himself here for a moment. Talked about all kinds of issues. Here's from November 1956, Dr. King on the downside of capitalism, lamenting disparities between rich and poor in this address at the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, Montgomery, Alabama, November 1956, at the time of the Montgomery bus boycott.
And I still contend, America, that money can be the root of all evil, that money can lead one to live a life of gross materialism. And I'm worried that too many people in America are more concerned about making a living than making a life. And yes, America, money can lead to exploitation. And so often you have done that. For they tell me that 0.1% of the population controls more than 50% of the wealth. Oh, America, how you've taken necessities from the masses to give luxuries to the classes.
Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., November 1956. Reverend James Forbes is with us. We're joined right now as well by Roger Wilkins. He joins us from Washington, professor of history and American culture at George Mason University, Pulitzer Prize winner, former assistant attorney general in the Civil Rights Division during the Johnson administration. Roger Wilkins, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
What do you make of this? We're hearing kind of mixed messages today. On the one hand, don't tussle over Dr. King's legacy. He belongs to everyone. On the other, his thinking being sort of put behind very opposite social positions today. Can everyone have it both ways? Can Dr. King stand for and with everyone?
Well, I think that people who try to make Martin stand for fix the character of black people and before you do anything else, have just distorted who he was, what he stood for, what he said, and how he was formed. Of course, black people, thinking black people, have always thought that character counted. King went to college at Morehouse under Dr. Benjamin Mays, who was a teacher and a former, a creator of moral fiber in young black men. When black men came out of Morehouse after they had gotten the Mays treatment, they knew what being a Morehouse man meant. It meant, among other things, men who were full of character. Now, not Dr. Mays, not Julian Bond, not Martin Luther King, not any of my other friends who came out of Morehouse would ever have said that the content of character is the last and most important goal we seek. It is one of the goals we seek for our children and for our community. Mm. But Martin understood that the government had a huge role to play in this because black people had been intentionally disabled from competition in this highly competitive society, disabled in slavery, disabled by not being taught in slavery, being badly taught after slavery, being denied participation in the political process. Martin knew all of that disabling, and he captured it one day after the Civil Rights Bill of 1964 was passed when he said, well, we've now gotten the Negro the right to sit on a lunch counter. Now we've got to get him the wherewithal to buy the hamburger.
He said, a society that has done something special against the Negro for hundreds of years must now do something special for the Negro. Let me turn to our listeners again, if I may. Howard's calling from Clifton, Virginia. Howard, you're on the air with Reverend James Forbes and Roger Wilkins.
What a great panel, an august panel you have. An honor to be on. I agree with Reverend Forbes' views and with regard to Dr. King. And I've read about Dr. King. When I was a child, I saw him give a speech. My dad used to work with Dr. King in Virginia. Dr. King was an advocate of the theology of liberation. He fought against racial discrimination and poverty with the Poor People's Campaign and the Just War. And when you extrapolate that and put it on a path, I agree with Reverend Forbes that he would be moving today toward the inclusion of the gays and the those who've been discriminated against on the basis of sex. He would be moving beyond that to a moral transcendence to include things like global pollution and global warming. I would think he might even be and this is at the far end, he might even be an advocate of the position that Christianity has failed in that it has had its opportunity for so many years, and look what it has brought us. Almost now with the global warming and the wars and the great inequity, and that there is a great calling now to maybe not just Christianity, but to the religious community.
Howard, you're thinking very widely there.
Well, my dad said that I remember him saying this. My dad's still living, but he said King was out of the box. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, Howard, let us turn to Reverend James Forbes, who we've only got for a couple more minutes here. Reverend Forbes, can you imagine Martin Luther King ever going with that last, moving beyond Christianity in desperation about the state of things?
It is obvious that Dr. King could not be contained in one tradition alone. He was a good Christian man. He understood that tradition. But when he sought to find inspiration for his movement, he went to speak with Gandhi, mm-hmm. a Hindu, mm-hmm. Basically because he did not believe that one group of people enjoyed the blessings of God. He spoke of the world house together, in which he said, we are like a people who inherited this house, and the only problem is we have to live in it together. And he spoke of Buddhists, Christians, Jews, Hindus, all of these people learning to live together. Now, he would not overcome. He would not disband his commitment to faith. He wouldn't leave the Bible behind. But he would want us to participate at the table together. So King today would be calling for interfaith dialogue. He would say, Christianity is my faith, but I must hear the truth as it is revealed in other religious traditions as well. And for that reason, we have to divide up. Devotional communities can be specific, and they can speak about their tradition as being the only one, and like you talk about your wife as the only one, the best one. But at the heart of King's message is that we're all God's children and that God loves us all. He spoke of love as revealed in Jesus Christ, but that was related to love as he found it when he talked to Gandhi and when he talked to Thich Nhat Hanh and others. He's bigger than his tradition, though he's deep within his tradition, and that's where we are all called upon to be today. Be faithful, knowledgeable, strong in your own tradition, but join hands with religious leaders around the world to figure out how we can make our way towards peace and prosperity and protect the good earth that seems to be under assault today.
Reverend Forbes, I know we have you for just another minute. Let me ask you, turn to another facet here, if I may, where conservatives are pointing at Martin Luther King. There's been criticism of the depth of religious activism, in particular fundamentalist Christian activism in the past several years. In the GOP in particular, people saying the line between church and state is being blurred here. Some conservative Christian activists are now saying, look, Dr. Martin Luther King was out in the street and in the middle of politics all the time in the name of religion. Why shouldn't we? Is that a fair equation?
Being funded by the U.S. government. I mean, that's a big...
Roger Wilkins, you're saying a different fundamental dynamic?
This is Roger. I hate to bump into my friend Jim Forbes, whose wisdom I always, always love. But I have to say, and I agree with everything Jim said about Martin and his religious and his breadth of religion, but there are two things that are really important. First of all, he was killed in Memphis because he was serving the least of us. The people who were despised because they were sanitation workers. If that wasn't an powerful expression of his Christian faith, I don't know what was. And I had a conversation with him before he went back to Memphis after there had been a big brawl at the previous march, and I said, Martin, I don't think you should go there. The situation is out of control. Mm-hmm. I just don't think I don't think it's safe. Why are you going back? And he looked at me and he said, Roger, because I promised them.
And he kept that promise. James Forbes, I know we're going to lose you in just a moment, but on this point, you have conservative Christians saying Martin Luther King followed his passion for Christianity into politics. We're doing the same on gay marriage, on affirmative action, on abortion. Can they claim that mantle?
Well, they're saying it. They're saying claiming his mantle, but they're reaching conclusions that he never would have made. He would not have excluded gays and lesbians. I cannot imagine Martin thinking that people who really wanted to love each other, spend a committed life together, raise children together, would be denied it because they were born a certain way.
Reverend Forbes, what about the activism itself?
Activism. I think that Dr. King believed that if you had a religious perspective that had impact on the social policy, you had a responsibility to bear witness, march about it, debate about it, vote for it.
Whether you're conservative or liberal?
I believe King would encourage, if you've got a light, put it on the lampstand so everybody can see it. But I believe it's very clear that any position that is trying to promote my political interest to the exclusion of others, that's a problem. And the spirit of love was much more important for King than any dogmatism regarding anybody's particular religion. And in the use of the Bible, King would always tilt towards that aspect of the Bible that called us to love, to inclusion, rather than the violence and the exclusion, which also we find in the Bible. He would say, you've got a choice to make. Either if you understand the Spirit, and as a Christian, if you understand the Spirit of Christ, you have to understand that if the cross is at the center of our faith, then violence is no longer a primary means by which violence has no place in the effort to try to achieve the kingdom of God as we believed in. So I think the issue is, but yes, activism is right, but an activism that is self-seeking and that is designed to put down others, that is designed to destroy the democratic principles that all of us have on access to resources. He would say your activism has to be judged by the spirit of love. And if the spirit of love is not at the heart of your activism, then you find yourself an enemy to the God that you say that you're trying to serve.
Mm. Reverend
That's
James,
what I believe Dr. King would be saying to all of us today, and he'd speak to the left and to the right about that.
Mm. Reverend James Forbes, the now retiring senior minister of the Riverside Church in New York, it's been an honor to have you with us today. Thank you very much for joining us.
And thank you so much.
Let me get one last call here. Siddiqui is calling from Roxbury, Massachusetts. Siddiqui, you're on the air, and our time is short, my friend.
Yes, how you doing? I believe that in 2007, we could actually predict what Dr. King's legacy would have been, and that's why he was assassinated. He was moving from a dream to a reality that integration was not possible here because of the fact that racism was so deeply embedded within the fabric of the society. And so I think he made a determination that black folk had to do more for self. That's why he was in discussions with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He was talking with Malcolm X and others. And he was speaking out against the wall, which means he was defying the military industrial complex. So I believe that J. Edgar Hoover and others made a determination that he was becoming too dangerous because of the fact he'd become an icon for black people to do for self, and that he had to be, in fact, killed. In fact, there's certified documentation that he was assassinated by elements from the U.S. government, and I think that it's shameful that black leadership all across the country is not pressing that for the perpetrators of this assassination to be apprehended and prosecuted.
Siddiqui, you're putting some big stuff out, and we've only got a minute left. Thank you for your call, Roger Wilkins. Martin Luther King is a black nationalist. Would that have been the evolutionary trail?
Just look at what he was doing, what he was planning. The last campaign that he planned was the Poor People's Campaign. And it was his dream to bring poor people of all colors, black, white, red, yellow, brown, all the poor people in America, bring their representatives to the mall in Washington, present poverty to the national government, get the national government to stop disabling all of these poor people. He was not dealing only with black people. His heart and his dream was for every American child to be armed with a decent education in a home that had, coming from a home that had adequate resources to feed, clothe, and guide that child. White, black, brown, red. They were all children of God to him. They were all Americans to whom a duty was owed. That was the last effort of his life. I cannot see a man whose energies were going in that direction to have veered off to say, nope, I'm only about black people.
Roger Wilkins, we're out of time. Professor of History at George Mason University, thanks for being with us. I'm Tom
You're
Ashbrook.
Welcome.
This is On Point. He's a